In the weeks that followed, Clark also briefed Vice President Cheney and Deputy National Security Advisor Stephen Hadley. Before the inauguration, Colin Powell worked his way through briefings at the State Department from the many bureaus. The Office of the Counterterrorism Coordinator, Edmund Hull, a Foreign Service officer, now held the job as acting coordinator, brought together the core members of the CSG to meet the incoming secretary. As they went around the table, each one presented his agency's perspective on bin Laden. Powell impressed those present as a careful, intense listener, who spoke rarely but asked thoughtful questions. After everyone had their turn and the group got up to leave, Brian Sheridan, the outgoing Assistant Secretary of Defense, felt a need to underscore the danger. "It was almost like a parting shot from a political appointee who was leaving," he said. "Make no mistake about Al-Qaeda. This is a really big thing. It will be a really big problem." At a meeting with Condoleezza Rice, he repeated his message. "I told them this is not an amateur-type deal, and you need Dick Clark. It's serious stuff. These guys are not going away." I just remember her listening and not asking much. Sheridan, a former CIA analyst who had been a business consultant before entering government, let the new team entering the Pentagon know that he was happy to discuss any of the issues his office dealt with. Not only terrorism, but also counter-drug programs in Colombia and the Caribbean. "I offered to brief anyone, anytime, on any topic. Never took it up." The record of the first months of the new administration suggests that its leaders were preoccupied with other matters. They moved quickly on two issues as soon as they were in office. Their top priority, it was a security issue that Bush had campaigned on most vocally, was the construction of a national missile defense. Even before he was sworn in, Bush set about courting key lawmakers to line up support for his vision of a missile shield. During the early months of 2001, administration officials flew thousands of miles to consult with Russia, China, and European and Asian allies over the shape of such a system and its implications, such as the scrapping of the 1972 Anti-Ballistic Missile Treaty. An unspoken rule of the new administration was that its policies should contrast sharply with those of the previous administration, which were spoken of with contempt. Everything that had a Clinton label had to be changed. "It was visceral," observed one Foreign Service officer who had been through several presidential transitions. Dick Clark, surprising almost everyone, survived the change of administration. If records were kept for such things, they might show that he was the only career civil servant to serve as an NSC senior director under three consecutive presidents and through two changes of party. Perhaps in earlier, less partisan days, this distinction would not have been so rare. Clark had hoped that the new team, which described itself as being hard-headed and decisive, would move quickly to attack Al-Qaeda. On his computer, he had an options paper for them that he first drafted in October. Many of the central elements were already in preparation. What was needed was an executive decision to follow through. So when Steve Hadley sent all the NSC directorates a request for proposals for principals' meetings in January, Transnational Threats replied with a memo saying that a meeting on Al-Qaeda was urgently needed. This was not, the directorate said, some narrow little terrorist issue. A broader regional policy was required. A follow-up message noted, "We would make a major error if we underestimated the challenge Al-Qaeda poses, or overestimated the stability of the moderate, friendly regimes Al-Qaeda threatens." The front office was not persuaded. Rice had been surprised by the small empire of portfolios that Clark had amassed in the years since she was last in the old executive office building, and she wanted to consider whether all those issues should be handled by the NSC and whether a national coordinator for terrorism was needed. Instead of scheduling a principals' meeting, they carried out a reorganization of the NSC that diminished Clark's position, removing him from the seat he had held for 3 years on the Principals Committee during meetings on terrorism. That position had boosted Clark's influence on U.S. policy, enabling him to push cutting-edge programs such as Predator and pump up agency counterterrorism budgets. But Rice wanted to consider doing things differently. She asked Clark to lead an interagency review of U.S. policy toward al-Qaeda, and according to the Washington Post, spoke dismissively of her predecessor's approach to counterterrorism, saying that the Clinton administration approach was empty rhetoric that made us look feckless. Military leaders who remained in office in the Bush administration saw terrorism moving farther to the back burner, as Hugh Shelton put it. The squeaky wheel was Dick Clark, but he wasn't at the top of their priority list, so the lights went out for a few months. Dick did a pretty good job because he's abrasive as hell, but given the level he was at, there was no breaking through into the new team's field of vision.